You'll see what that means. You'll see. It fits. It fits. Well, good evening once again. It's Thursday evening, and it's good to be gathered together. One of the things I do enjoy about meetings like this is just seeing places and faces and being able to actually put them together. There's a lot of hospitality that happens. I want to recognize that. A lot of hosting, and it's part of what we enjoy. So we continue exploring this evening this theme of the human heart. And if you remember right, some of what we're looking at, what's organizing this, what's holding it all together, is identifying barriers and looking for bridges to what it is that God seems to have wanted for our hearts. And that's that our hearts are going to be settled in love of God, right? Love of God and love of neighbor, and when we love God and when we love our neighbors well, what that means is that our hearts are actually going to come alive. We're going to see, we're going to hear, and we're going to understand. And if we're not seeing and hearing, if we're not loving God well, our hearts are going to become kind of muddied. We won't see very well. We won't hear very well. We will not understand. So the barrier that we identify today and that we're going to be working with is the barrier of self-love. Okay. And the bridge is God-love. So self-love, God-love. That's what we'll be working with. And I'm just going to begin with this question. The question is this: what do you think of the advice? And I'll keep on coming back to this question, so we can hold it for now, but I might invite your response as we go. What do you think of the advice, follow your heart? Follow your heart. Or how about this phrase that gets spun around sometimes these days, you do you? Part of what I'm wondering is, in what kind of world, there's the advice, but then I'm also wondering, in what kind of world would that advice even make sense? Follow your heart. Because there's been a good many times in history that sort of advice wouldn't even make any sense. In our age, it does. That's part of what we'll be looking at. What kind of age is that? That makes sense, and what do you think of that advice? Is that good advice? Follow your heart. Could it be good advice? Conditionally. We'll be working with that. So I'm working with the claim that what you're here, this is where I'm going, just give you a little preview, that this world, the world we live in, like many times, but especially this one, seems to be steeped in self-love. And that self-love, the kind of self-absorbed self-love that we tend to see these days, is different than putting God first love. You get self-love thrown in for free if you put God love first, but not the other way around. So let's dig in. I want to get us started again on the same foot. We just worked up some ground yesterday, and I'm identifying some cultural phrases that people use to identify the heart, and we briefly skate over the biblical world of the human heart, and you did most of that hard work. This one conclusion we came to is this, and here's the conclusion we arrived at. The heart is central to being a human, right? It's fundamental to how we feel about the world, to how we think about the world, and how we act in the world. And because of that, it matters. It really matters what's in your heart, how you think about your heart, and what your heart is turned toward. Turn toward the wrong thing, you're going to be thinking and feeling and understanding and experiencing in ways which are distorted, twisted. And you can help me out a little bit here. If you remember, every day, you know, we have these encounters with experiences and coworkers, ourselves even. What are these things? I gave a word for them. Just the everyday circumstances. Thank you. Almost got it, but not quite. Circumstances. We have our circumstances, and they're so varied. What were your circumstances today? What are you facing? What's pressing in on you? What opportunities or risks are on your horizon? Those are your circumstances, and these enter our hearts. Right? It's the epicenter of who you are as a person. It's the seat of our longings. This is more than just Hallmark sentimentality. It's the seat of our longings about what we want the world to be like. What's your vision of what the good life is like? And our hearts act kind of like a prism. The circumstances, and they come and they enter into our hearts, and they're kind of broken out as if there were some kind of prism here. Well, I'm not going to wait on that, I guess. But they're broken out, and there's three things we identified here. What comes out of our hearts from our circumstances? First thing, emotions. Unmistakable, right? Second thing, actions. Thank you. And third, reason. Yeah. Reason or thinking. Thank you. That's getting it out there again. I want to make sure we're on the same page a little bit. I'm just going to make a few observations about this, then we're going to really dig in. And the first observation, laying it out like this and with that background, that work that we've done already, the first observation is that say, doing the right action is just part of the whole thing. Okay? Or feeling the right feeling or thinking the right thing. That's part of the whole picture. And one thing that strikes me about the Christian way of thinking about and working with our hearts is it works all together. It harmonizes. And that's the Christian view of a heart that's working well as a Christian heart can. There's going to be some frictions. There's going to be some dissonances, right? But emotion and action and reason, they're cooperating. And Christian morality, at least as we think about it, it brings them together. They're supposed to work together. Sin twists this. Where there's supposed to be harmony, there's introduced dissonances. Where there's supposed to be these different parts working together and harmonizing, there becomes friction. Things aren't working together very well anymore. That's what sin is. In some senses, it's just introducing brokenness and distortion and warpedness into what it is that God made to work together. That's what sin is like. Another observation, a third one, not quite so plain here maybe, but forgive me, I got to go down just a short little rabbit hole here. Sometimes we can work with these distinctions, these tidy distinctions about the inner and the outer, okay? The inner part, which is my heart, and then there's this outside part that's my body, but you can't judge my heart because you can't see it, which introduces a pretty strong disconnect here, doesn't it? Starts to pull those things apart. And it's true. It's true that the New Testament gives us this fundamental idea that a tree produces fruit, a heart produces emotion, a heart produces action, which is consistent with its essential character. Right? That's true. What's in here will come out. And it's possible to act in ways which seem good without that essential character being changed. It's possible. So everything that we do, everything we think, everything we feel springs from who we are, what we love. And we can't change that without supernatural aid. And yet, historically, Anabaptists would refuse to make an absolute disconnect there. They'd refuse to say that we can't cooperate with God's grace, and that you can't learn something about the disposition of a person's heart by some of what's presenting out there. So this inside-out distinction has become lopsided, as in if the inner is disconnected from the outer. I think it can come out in these phrases like, it's the heart that counts, or Jesus only knows my heart, which is basically just a way of saying, all you can do is affirm me, don't judge me. It can give this idea that our hearts are pristine and good, and our actions can be whatever we want them to be, as if it's only one direction. Only love, and it only works its way out. But it's more thick than that, as in the things we think, the things we do, even the emotions that we feel shape what's in our hearts, too. It works this way out. It also works that way in. I'm just going to put it out there for now. I'm not defending it. I think it's critical. It's critical. If that's true, if the outside works in and the inside works out, it's critical for us to live in ways that cultivate the sorts of loves that are suitable for the kingdom of heaven. It's going to shape our hearts. And our hearts will express themselves. And we can shape our hearts. Our hearts will express themselves. It's something much more reciprocating. And it's not just one direction. Not only one direction. I hope I'm being clear there. That's a third observation. Outside in, inside out. Another observation is just we can't not love something. We can't not love something. We're always, always driving towards some vision or another of what we think is going to bring us thriving or happiness or joy or peace or whatever it is we think is going to settle us down. We're always moving towards something. There's no activity, there's no choice that's not set on some picture of what we think will make us ultimately happy. Okay? It's just that we don't always examine those things. And finally, I said this last night, it's worth saying again, our hearts can be quite the ruckus. There's mixed loves. We have different ideas about what's going to bring us happiness, and they don't always cooperate with each other. We can't just choose everything that we love, but we can begin where we are. Okay? We can open ourselves to the love of Christ and ask Christ to begin to reshape us. Okay, that's enough background. I'm not quite happy here. We've got this roughed in, but I'm wondering, what is it here that's at the middle? What's the prism? What's the thing that breaks this out? And I've alluded to it already. Now I'm just going to clarify this. What's that fundamental reality which shapes our hearts, which shapes the way our hearts refract things out into the things we think or feel or do? What is that thing? And what is that thing we're giving to Jesus when we give our hearts to Him? And over, Scripture it points our hearts to their ultimate target. Deuteronomy 4:6-5. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And this is the central confession of the people of God for thousands of years. And it goes on, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And there we have it, the commands of God, the promises of God, they find their focus in this. Love the Lord. Love the Lord. It's always going to that. Love the Lord. God can't just show up. It's not just an arbitrary command. Just love me. It's consistent with who He is. God is a faithful God. God is a loving God. God wants to reveal Himself. He's worth loving. He wants to be loved. And in Matthew 22:37, Luke 10:27, Jesus reiterates this statement. It's been with the people of God for thousands of years, and he reiterates it. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, strength. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself, he says. And this is a thick love with persistence and determination and dedication and long patience with ourselves and sometimes with God and with each other too. And part of what's going on here is just this. You know, we become like what we love. We become like what we love. And when we love God this way, we begin to feel and act and think in our limited way like he does. And Chad, I think you used that language last night, that we become, our hearts are what brings us into God's likeness. That's the word. It's not like we become God, but little echoes of him by Christ through the Spirit. So he's setting love at the center of our hearts. And I feel a danger in bringing that term out at all. I could lose you right here. Love, it's become this really thin term that we use to describe what we think or feel about our spouse, about our brothers or sisters. And we also use the same word to describe what we think or feel about almonds or vanilla chai lattes. We love them. They're okay. But it's the word has gotten diluted. It means a lot of things, not all of them equally. This is a thick love. This is not a thin love. It's a thick love. It's our attachment to some picture or another of what it is that our lives could or should or ought to be like. That's the kind of love. It's what we long for. It's what we set our hearts on and we say, yes, that's what I want my life to be like. That's this kind of love. It's the kind of love that Jesus addresses when he says, blessed are the pure in heart. You know, children, they show us a little bit of what this kind of love is like, this thick love. They know how to set their hearts on things. They know how to focus what they want. They know how to love one thing. And this is one of the bigger challenges of parenting, isn't it? You know, the child sees something. They have a picture of what their life could or should or ought to be like, and they want it. And they're so focused on getting it that nothing else is going to matter, and all their attention and energy comes and settles on getting that thing. That's love. They're attached to that. They want that. It's all that matters. And so when Jesus, he takes a child, he places the child among his disciples, and he says, unless you become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. This is part of what he's referring to. And he places a blessing on the pure in heart. Blessed are the pure in heart, those who want one thing. Those who love clearly, purely, for they shall see God. That's the reward. They get what they love. So that's what our hearts are made for. They're made to love. And they're made to love God. Okay? And healed hearts are hearts that love God, that love their neighbor rightly. But what if we use our hearts for something other than God love? We can do that. What if we use them for self-love instead? And maybe a little illustration or example here could be helpful. I somewhat frequent, twice a year maybe, go to this place, Lloyd's Rental. Now it's Sunbelt Rental. They're in Meadville. They rent out power equipment, right? And the guys are kind of interesting to chat with when they have the time. One of the things I learned from them, though, is that they don't rent chainsaws. It's like, well, that's okay, you don't rent chainsaws. Why don't you rent chainsaws? And it's like, well, you used to rent chainsaws. They would come back in all kinds of conditions, just destroyed, abused. He said, some people, you're like, you wouldn't believe this, but some people rent chainsaws and use them to dig trenches. And here's the question, can a chainsaw dig a trench? Yeah, it can dig a trench, okay, good. Can a human heart run on self-love? Can it? Yeah, okay. How long? A little while. And can you use a chainsaw for what it's meant for if you use it to cut a trench? After that? No. Why not? It's destroyed. Could it be fixed? Yeah. It's going to take some work. It's going to take some time. What will happen to a heart that's designed to run on God love, that runs on self love? Right? So our hearts, they're tuned for, they're built for love of God. And any other love, maybe especially self-love, that we attach ourselves to and that we allow our hearts to grow around is going to disharmonize them. It's going to detune them. There's going to be dullness. There's going to be blindness and friction and eventually destruction. If our hearts love something other than God, and if we hang on to that, it'll doom our hearts. It'll doom us. Okay. Those are high stakes, I realize. I would just suggest there, too, the sooner God gets a hold of a heart that's moving towards self-love, the sooner he gets a hold of that heart and interrupts that, the more merciful he's being. Okay. A heart that's full of lust is having God love twisted into self-worship. Please me. A heart consumed with anger is taking the love of God's justice and making it mine. Don't cross me. A heart that's consumed with pride is twisted into self-sufficiency. I have what it takes. I am enough. I have everything I need, and can make it happen how I want it to happen. So the more open we are to self-love, the harder we are to God. The harder we are to self-love and the harder we are on self-love, the more we can love God. And the better our hearts will run. So soft hearts open to God, that's our bridge. That's our bridge. And self-love is the barrier to God and neighbor love. There's a profound example of this in Exodus. You can look at this if you want to as well. Exodus 7 through 11. I'm not going to read everything that happened here. The story is not unfamiliar. It's the story of Pharaoh. And Pharaoh, he did him. He followed his heart. And God affirmed it. He hardened it. Pharaoh, he was so absorbed in self-love. He was so in love with his power that it didn't seem to matter what the Lord did with him, what the God of Israel did. It didn't seem to matter. His heart was hardened. And plagues rained down, 1 through 5. And God is giving a chance for Pharaoh to respond. Even Pharaoh, he gives him a chance to respond, plagues 1 through 5. And only after the 6th plague does the text say that God hardened the heart of Pharaoh. He started with a hard heart, a heart that was far from the love of God, a heart that was far from love of neighbor. That's pretty clear. He didn't love his neighbor. What Pharaoh cares about is building his kingdom of conquest and repression using whatever it's going to take. And it's finally after 5 plagues, God, in his way, being merciful. After 5 plagues, the Lord says, okay, not my will, but yours be done. And we have to take seriously our capacities like little Pharaohs to deceive ourselves. It's like Jeremiah 17:9 says, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. Who can understand it? Proverbs 21:2, every way of a man is right in his own eyes. You don't encounter a lot of people who aren't, their worlds don't make sense to them. Every man, the way of man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the heart. Or, these people's hearts have waxed gross. That is, they're sluggish. They're thick. They're not loving the Lord, but they're not all really that upset about it either. That's a heavy heart. Or like was already read for us by Tony, trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. Pharaoh did. In all your ways acknowledge him and he shall make straight your paths. So this is the picture of the heart of self-love. And an unchallenged heart, a heart that never encounters anything larger than itself and its love of self, is a horror. It's nothing short of a horror to encounter that heart. And an unchallenged heart with power is a terror. Okay? And it's a terrifying place to be in. To have a hard heart, to love it. The heart of self-love is the dominating heart. A heart that's in love with its power and seeks to expand its influence no matter what it takes. That heart will find itself in competition with the heart of God. And it will lose. God's love and self-love can't coexist. No person can serve two masters. So back to that question. What do you think now of that advice, follow your heart? Terrible? Always?
Depends what's there.
Yeah, telling somebody to follow their heart, it's not the kind of advice you want to just give out freely. Because if that heart is turned toward God and is cultivating God love, follow that heart. Encourage it, fan it, bring it aflame. God will continue to instruct that heart. But if the heart is turned away from God, that's the worst possible advice. The heart is taking them away from God. It's guiding them toward becoming some kind of hellish creature that's bound for hell. But I want to get a little bit more practical. That's the backdrop, maybe. And returning to that question, like, what kind of world are we living in where this phrase, follow your heart, you do you, even makes sense. It's an interesting world we live in. It's a strange new world. In this world, the heart, again, it's seen as some kind of pristine source of who we are, and it needs to be expressed. It needs to be brought out. And there's a true self in your heart that's just waiting to burst out into an astonished world. This is the gospel of what some folks call emotive expressivism. And it's the dominant way of thinking about our hearts today. That what's in here must come out. It must be honored. It must be expressed. And that's your true self. It's what's in there. It's a gospel that's preached constantly, and it's preached in endless forms. I'd like to just introduce you to one among many preachers of the gospel of emotive expressivism. It looks different in a church. I'm sorry about that. This is just one picture, and we're going to go a little bit further with this probably on Saturday. I just want to introduce you to this way of looking at things. If you know the story of Disney's Mulan, anyway, the Huns, they invade China, and the emperor, he orders a mobilization of the troops. And at the same time, Mulan, the adventurous and active young woman who doesn't fit the norms, you know, she meets with a matchmaker to consider her fitness to be a future wife, and it doesn't work out very well because she just does not fit the mold. And to save her father, she cuts her hair. She takes her father's sword and armor, joins the army, and she's joined by Mushu. He's the little red dragon and a cricket and a horse, and they guide her in her journey towards self-realization in the face of great adversity. And what do you know? The encounter of the Huns. And Mulan saves first her little group, and then her secret identity is revealed. She's a woman in the military. Later, she saves all of China. She overcomes the Hun leader with the help of a male officer and is praised by the emperor himself. And to be fair to Mulan, I mean, she still has some consideration for her culture and the norms. She declines a seat on the royal council and she returns home, and it seems like she's probably going to marry the officer whose life she saved earlier. This is one small example. One small example. And it sells. It sells well. The story does. It cost $90 million to make this, and it produced $304.3 million in the box office, and that's before the merchandise, which is still being sold, $20 for the classic doll, $160 for the 25th anniversary figure, or the $40 Halloween costume. You can get them on their website. There's just part of us. There's part of our loves. There's part of who we are. It's the potential for self-love is there that just loves to resonate with this story. But be alert to the subtext. What's the message behind this story? Well, the heroes here are the people who can play along with the rules and authorities and expectations of people around them. They can play along with that, but there's something deep inside of them that's more real. Their true self, their heart, which is pristine and whole and waiting to burst out of all these limitations. In Mulan, she sings a different song that is wrong to those around her. But hers is the right song because it's right to her. I don't want to be overly hard on Mulan, but this is the dominant way of thinking about our hearts these days. Where inside of us, buried deep inside all of these layers of what people expect of us and what's pressed in on us, there's a true self. And I just got to say, folks, this way of looking at ourselves has only been around for about 50 years, 60, 70 perhaps, okay? In its form we have now. And all of us are kind of encouraged on going on some kind of journey of discovering this deep self who's buried deep inside of us. We have to discover what it means to be ourselves. We have to be us, after all. You do you. And the way to do this is to sweep aside things like tradition or rules or authorities, all the people and places and expectations that hold us back from finding that true self wrapped under all these layers. We're left, again, with a one-way. What's in here can come out. What's out there can't come in. It's probably a threat. And we even have a word. You know, we have a word for people out there who would challenge our true selves in here. Haters. Block them. They're toxic. Who are they to know your heart? And there's things to wrestle with here. Because Christians affirm that the heart is central to being a human being. That much you have right, the heart is central. And a person who violates the heart of another person, a person that demands that you or I love them in a way that only God can ask, he's doing violence. And he's committing idolatry. So this is important. And the individual matters. But now it seems like the heart, these days, it's seen more as the center of a human. It's this, here's the word, it's inviolable. It's the source of who we are, and it can never be infringed on. It can never be dishonored. You do you. And this is the world where self-love is in control. We each get to be little pharaohs. At least as far as the law allows. Or forget the law if you've got enough money. That's self-love. I want to leave us, though, with God's determined love. Because the only thing that's stronger than a heart of self-love, the only thing that's stronger than a heart that's being hardened by self-love is a determined and persistent and creative and loving God. That's what's stronger. And this is where we learn about giving our hearts to Jesus, okay? So pay attention. Don't miss this. The Lord is determined. He is. He's always been determined to give his people new hearts that are rightly tuned, new hearts that are rightly operating and tuned toward love of God and love of neighbor. He's determined to have this. That's for our good. It's for his glory. He wants to have our hearts running that way. Ezekiel 36:26. I will give you a new heart and a new spirit I will put within you, and I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. And this is part of what having our hearts given to God is. It's having a soft heart of flesh, a heart of flesh and not of stone. But how does that begin? Where do we start? And I'd at least suggest we start in 1 John, that beautiful epistle of God's love. 1 John 4:19, we love him because he first loved us. Okay. This is the only thing I know of that's strong enough to break through a heart hardened by self-love. It's an answering response to God's determined and strong and resourceful creative love. And often it seems, in my experience anyway, it seems like God's love, it takes hold of us a little bit more quickly at the start. You know, we make a commitment, and we know our answering love is only small, but it's pure and it's strong and it's warm and it's there. We're giving our hearts to Jesus. And this begins to shift the direction of our hearts. And as we soften, and there's give and there's take. Sometimes we harden off, and sometimes we find places in our hearts that are much harder than we wish they were, than we were even aware of. And it's there, and we have to address it. But as we soften, our answering love grows. He loves us first. We love him back. He loves us first. And our hearts begin to be tuned to that one love that matters more than self-love. That's God love. So yes, our hearts, we can love many things. We can love ourselves. And the Spirit will continue to show us many ways to give our hearts to him. And that's something I found, I think, we get to do very frequently. Tony, I'll pray, and then you can come up and conclude. Let's pray.